So not only is it the right thing to do, but as with all our favourite policies, it makes a lot of economic sense as well.
Absolutely. Making childcare free frees up the income for families that have kids in childcare and allows them to spend more money elsewhere, which stimulates the economy. But it's also good value in the long run as well. It'll grow our economy faster.
One for mum, one for dad, one for the country.
And there has never been a more exciting time to be in Australia.
Dead, buried, cremated.
How good is Australia?
Australia's basically done for. We'll just end up being a third-rate economy. You know, a banana republic.
Just follow the money.
G'day, and welcome to Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's podcast demystifying the big economic issues in Australia and putting them in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Institute, and we're recording this on the 30th of June 2020. And it's the last day of our end of financial year appeal. And if you like our Follow the Money podcast and you're in a position to do so, please visit tai.org.au and donate $10, $20 or even $50 to our end of financial year appeal. Every little bit helps and we really appreciate your support.
Is we'll be ensuring for those parents who are still in that position where they are needing that childcare, it will be free.
So for us to be able to play our role in looking after their children has been really important for us.
To say the 1990 recession, which was typically affecting blue-collar men, now we've got a recession which seems to be affecting women more.
Is funded childcare the answer to that problem?
Absolutely it is.
The Federal Education Minister has indicated he won't be extending free childcare past June.
When you're burning through cash at a rate of almost $11 billion a month on JobKeeper, then obviously that's not something you can continue in that form forever.
And we are getting a lot of anecdotal feedback from small businesses and even large businesses where some of them are finding it hard to get people to come and take the shifts.
Trusting politics that Scott Morrison is playing with vulnerable people is reprehensible.
We've got all these women over here who do not have the same superannuation levels, do not have the same take-home pay and have the burden of childcare.
When the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, urged the states to reopen schools during the COVID-19 pandemic, he argued that doing so would lead to higher labour force participation rates. And he's correct. But since then, he's announced the imminent end of free childcare. And on top of that, he's announced that childcare workers, some of the lowest paid employees in the country, will be excluded from JobKeeper from next month as well. Literally no other industry has been excluded from this package. So today we're going to unpack exactly why free childcare was one of the best economic policies the Morrison or any coalition government has implemented and talk about why it makes economic sense to keep it. And I'm joined by our senior economist, Matt Grudnoff, who wrote the Australia Institute's most recent research report on this topic. G'day, Matt.
G'day, Ebony. How are you?
Good, thanks. Why is increasing the labour force participation rate important to the economy overall?
Well, so participation rate is one of the three things that can grow the economy in the long run, along with the size of the population. So if your population gets bigger, your economy can produce more stuff. And productivity, which is the amount of stuff you can produce for any amount of input. So the more productive you are, the larger your population and the higher your participation, your labour force participation rate, then the bigger your economy can be. And Treasury calls that the three Ps. And I suppose it's important to define what participation rate means. Basically, it's fairly simple. It's the percentage of people over the age of 15 in a particular economy that are employed or who are actively looking for work. So people who are participating in the economy or trying to get a job. So it's the employed and unemployed. And there are really good reasons why people sometimes don't participate. So if you're in full-time education, for example, or you're retired, then you're not in the labour force. Or if you're looking after children, which is what this podcast is going to be about, then you're also not participating in the labour force.
And I guess it's important at the moment because due to COVID-19, we're probably not going to have a huge influx of migrants to boost our population like we would normally have. And productivity at this point is probably not a a huge area of growth for the economy either.
Yes, that's right. So participation has the potential to boost the economy, particularly in the long run. Our economy could be quite a lot bigger if we could encourage more people to get out there and be involved in the labour market.
And so what does free childcare have to do with lifting the participation rate? Explain that for me.
Well, so what we see is if parents don't have access to good quality childcare that's affordable, then they make the decision, or at least one of them, usually the woman, makes the decision to stay home and look after the kids. And so while there are some families who even if childcare was free, they choose to stay home and look after the kids, and that's perfectly okay, there are quite a number of families who are basically making this decision not because that's necessarily what they would want to do, but rather because they don't have access to that high-quality, cheap childcare.
And so what was the actual policy that the Morrison government announced shortly after the coronavirus lockdown?
Well, it's actually quite a good policy. It made childcare free. So basically the government paid the childcare fees. They did this for a number of reasons. They saw a big drop off in people accessing childcare because of concerns around the coronavirus, but also it was stimulatory. So on average, people who send their kids to childcare, families that send their kids to childcare, spend 17% of their income on those childcare fees in Australia. Now, if the government pays those, then these families have 17% of their income that they can spend on other stuff. So they can buy other things, which then creates more demand in the economy at a time when economic growth is slowing and reversing, it's contracting. And this can help move us out of a recession. It's effectively stimulus spending.
So basically, if childcare costs $100, then this would free up, what, $20 for, I'm just trying to picture or put it in to like a perspective for people about that 17% and what that would mean for an average family.
Yeah, well, it means that let's say a household has a total household income of $100,000 a year, then on average they're spending about $17,000 on childcare. And so that's a significant, 17% is a significant chunk of their income.
Yeah, it's big.
Yeah. And what's particularly interesting is that at a time when the Prime Minister was trying to convince the states to reopen schools, so schools went into lockdown for a period of time back in March and April, and the government was desperately trying to convince the states to open their schools back up. And one of the arguments they made was that schools should be opened up because keeping them closed meant that parents couldn't participate in the workforce.
These children need you for our schools to remain open.
It was Treasury's estimate at the time that the macroeconomic impact from closing schools and childcare centres for 3 months could reduce GDP by around $34 billion.
And this drop in participation was going to cost, Treasury estimated, 300,000 jobs or 7% of GDP. And that's a significant drop.
Yeah, that's huge.
Now, of course, that argument, parents can't participate because they've got to look after kids, is equally true for younger kids, for preschool kids. It's true for school-aged kids, but it's also true for preschool kids. And so the same arguments that apply for opening up the schools also apply for childcare and making childcare cheap, good quality and affordable.
So the short-term effect of free childcare is stimulatory because it frees up more discretionary income for families with children who need it. And how much, out of curiosity, does free childcare cost, Matt, now that we've had it for a couple of months?
Well, it depends. So they kind of rushed it in. So we're not 100% sure. There's probably ways that you could do it that is more efficient than the way the government did it. But even if we did it in that kind of rushed way, we're looking at about between $7 and $8 billion per year is the total cost of making childcare free.
And so in the scheme of the roughly $200 billion that the government has spent on various stimulus measures, it's
tiny.
It's actually quite small.
Yeah, look, it's extremely small in comparison. And the benefits to GDP, that is the benefits to the economy of free childcare are substantial. And so what...
Yeah, so what happens in the long run?
Well, in the long run, so it's stimulatory in the short run. In the long run, what we did was we had a look around the world for countries that do very well for high participation rates. And there were a bunch of countries that stuck out. And these are the Nordic countries. These are countries Iceland, Sweden, Finland, Norway, and Denmark. And these countries have excellent childcare policies. Their childcare is extremely affordable. And the early childhood education and care they provide is of a very high standard. So, for example, in Australia, it costs about 17% of the budget for a family to send to their kids to childcare. In Iceland and Sweden, it's only 4%. So it's significantly less. And because of that, women in particular, who are most affected by, in participation terms, when families have children, women in these Nordic countries don't see a fall in participation. So if we look at Australia's participation rate by age, so we start with, you know, people in their, you know, 15 to 20, we go through their life cycle all the way over to when they're sort of 65 plus. We see this for men, that is, we see this lovely kind of curve that increases. It sort of peaks in the 30s and 40s and 50s and then drops away after that. But when we look at women in Australia, it increases all the way through to their late 20s, and then in their 30s, which is the time when the most number of families are having kids or raising kids, we see an actual drop in participation rate, a distinct drop down, and then it begins to recover after that, but it never quite reaches the peak that of women in their early 20s. That is, the group of women that have the highest participation rates are those in their late 20s. So it never gets back. But if we look at Nordic women from Nordic countries, there is no dip. They just have a steady increase and they stay at that higher level.
So really, the lack of affordable childcare is an enormous barrier to women participating in the workforce, even though, you know, men have children too.
Exactly right. So, you know, despite the fact that, you know, you would hope that the chores at home were including things like childcare were evenly split, unfortunately, it's pretty obvious they're not. And so the burden of care, particularly childcare, falls on women. And because of that, and because of the lack of affordable quality childcare, some women are making the choice not to go and work when they would rather, it's quite possible they would rather go out and work. And affordable childcare doesn't force women to put their kids into childcare, but it does give them that choice. They're able to do it if they want to.
Give them the option.
That's right, yep.
And coronavirus really, we've talked about this on the last couple of episodes, the lockdown and the parts of the economy that the pandemic have mostly affected in Australia, it's really hit women and industries that employ a lot of women quite hard. And even in industries where men outnumber women, women seem to be doing it much more tough during this recession. So free childcare and policies that help women stay in the workforce or stay connected to the workforce presumably are going to be more important than ever if we want to counteract the effects of the recession.
That's exactly right. So policies that are going to enable women to stay in the workforce are going to help throughout this recession, and also policies that enable women to stay in the workforce over their lifetime are not just going to help those individual women. They're going to accumulate more super. They're going to be stay in the workforce, be promoted more, earn more income. But it's actually good for all of us. So we did some calculations and we worked out that if Australia had the same participation rates as Nordic countries, as the average for Nordic countries, then Australia's GDP would be $60 billion higher, or 3.2% higher. So basically, average income in Australia would be 3.2% higher if we had the same participation rates as the average for Nordic countries.
So Matt, 3% or so doesn't sound huge in the scheme of things, but what does that really mean?
Well, it's $60 billion extra dollars in the economy.
That's big.
Yes, it's absolutely big. And remember, we're talking about a budgetary cost of perhaps $7 to $8 billion for the free childcare. And sure, Nordic countries have other things like paid parental leave schemes and other schemes that encourage women or help women stay in the workforce. But childcare is a very big part of that.
Mm.
And also, that's the average for Nordic countries. If we look at Iceland, which had the highest participation rates, if we had the same participation rates as Iceland, then the economy would be $140 billion bigger, or 7.5% of GDP. So there are huge gains that can be made simply by giving women the choice to be able to stay in the workplace and giving them access to affordable, high-quality childcare.
Not a bad return, $140 billion on about $7 billion outlay.
Absolutely. Women are more likely to have a degree. Women bring a great skill set to work. So, you know, not only would the total income of Australia go up, but we would also gain all those extra productive skills that women bring to the workforce.
So not only is it the right thing to do, but as with all our favourite policies, it makes a lot of economic sense as well.
Absolutely. It makes economic sense. It makes economic sense in the short run, and that, you know, making childcare free frees up the income for families that have kids in childcare and allows them to spend more money elsewhere, which stimulates the economy. But it's also good value in the long run as well. It'll grow our economy faster.
Matt, I know in the past you've done a lot of research around how recessions and economic downturns impact women, and sometimes very disproportionately compared to men. What happened in the aftermath of the GFC?
Well, we have to go back a little bit before the GFC. So what usually happens is we had a boom before the last economic crisis. Well, while we call it the GFC, the rest of the world calls it the Great Recession, because most of the world went into recession. Australia didn't, but most of the world did. So there's a big mining boom before that. And during that mining boom, the Howard government kept cutting income tax rates. In fact, every year at the budget, they would cut income tax rates. And we did some research and found that 70% of those tax cuts, just over two-thirds, went to men. And about 30% or just under a third went to women. So men enjoyed the vast majority of those tax cuts. But of course, those tax cuts meant that the budget in more normal times, in non-boom times, struggled to generate enough income to remain in or create a surplus. So after the GFC, when the current coalition government was busily trying to balance the budget, what they did was they cut a whole heap of services. They didn't increase the income tax that had been cut. No, they went after and they tried to cut services. And what we found is that the cuts that were being made to the budget, 55% of those impacted women and 45% impacted men. So during the good times, the governments cut taxes that mostly benefits men. And during the bad times, they cut services that mostly benefit women.
So it's heads men win and tails women lose.
That's exactly right.
Mr. Fletcher, I mean, it just goes to show that you, to be honest, you don't have enough women in your party. If I can give you some tips, the first thing I think we need is a gender disaggregated data around COVID-19 to understand how it's disproportionately affecting women. We then need a gender responsive budget in order to compensate that unfair economic structure. And when we talk about the economic impact of COVID-19, we also have to talk about the unpaid work economy and the informal work economy, which women are disproportionately make up.
And so coming now to the spending that the government is doing in response to the recession and the fiscal measures that they're taking, there's really no evidence to suggest that the government is assessing the greater or the disproportionate effect that this recession is having on women and is targeting any of its measures specifically at women to help address those problems.
No, they appear to be flying completely blind. In economics, we say if you want something, if something's important, then you measure it. So you measure things and then people can understand what's happening and they can make changes to policy to try and influence those things. This government appears not to be measuring or thinking about the impact that its policies are having on women at all. And the result is that what we're getting is we're getting women losing their jobs faster than men. A bigger proportion of women are losing their jobs than men. But most of the stimulus package, like the construction, the money into housing construction, are mostly going to benefit men and not women.
And even, programs like JobKeeper, which excluded a huge number of casuals, which we know many more women are likely to be in casual and part-time roles, even those kind of big, broad brushstroke, fiscal packages, even then seemed not to be designed thinking about the gender impacts.
That's right. It's very likely that the government is simply not thinking about this because they're not measuring it. There's nobody coming to the cabinet table when these decisions are being made saying, let's think about or let's look at or let's measure the gender implications of these policies. And if you want to take these kind of things seriously, then the best thing you can do is simply measure them, because if the information is there, then people can make an informed decision. If the information is not there, then they just sort of barrel on without thinking about it at all.
So, Matt, the last time you released this research about tax cuts helping men and cuts to services harming more women, the government really reacted quite badly to that analysis. And basically, I think, I can't remember if it was the Treasurer or the Prime Minister more or less said, well, we don't, tax returns aren't pink and blue. You don't fill them out as a, you know, there's not a different one for men and women. But that really just fundamentally misunderstands that even if your intent isn't to, you know, harm women or make them lose out, if that's the outcome, it's still bad policy.
Well, exactly right. And you're right, whether it was the PM or the Treasurer, it was both. It was Scott Morrison, so it was when he was the Treasurer and now he is the PM. And look, it's not that the government is possibly deliberately trying to disadvantage women and advantage men. It's that they don't think about it. It's ignorance rather than maliciousness, I think. If they were serious about these kind of issues, if they were serious about the gender pay gap, if they were serious about problems around women having far less super than men in retirement, if they were serious about homelessness, that the group that's rising fastest in homelessness is older women, then they need to start measuring and start considering this and start thinking about all of their policies and what impact that has on it, not just reacting in a crisis and doing stuff that's going to advantage men over women when it's actually women who are being disadvantaged by this particular economic crisis.
And I guess even if it wasn't intended to be malicious, if you're a woman who can't access JobKeeper and whose childcare goes from being free to very expensive, it could start to feel malicious quite quickly, I imagine.
Absolutely, yeah. Look, I mean, it doesn't make any difference for them whether it was deliberate or not. The pain is going to be the same.
Well, we might wrap it up there. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
This has been a special episode of Follow the Money, and we're aiming to bring you shorter but more frequent episodes during the pandemic, so please stay tuned. You can check out the Australia Institute's Economics of a Pandemic webinar series at our website, tai.org.au/webinars. And our next event is on Wednesday, the 1st of July at 11 a.m. with Professor Jane Golley talking to Alan Bean, the Australia Institute's Director of our International and Security Affairs Program, about how to navigate the Australia-China relationship, which, you know, we're not doing a great job of at the moment. It's free, but registration is essential, so go to our website to register now. For the latest health information, you can check health.gov.au or listen to the ABC's excellent CoronaCast podcast, which comes out daily. And you can visit tai.org.au for all our latest research and content, including Matt's report on childcare. We're on Twitter at the Oz Institute with an AUS, and my Twitter handle is Ebony_Bennett with a double N double T. Matt is at Matt Grudnoff, that's GRUDNOFF. And this episode was produced by Jennifer Macy with help from Grace Crivellero and Lucy Law. Our theme music is by Jonathan McPheat from Pulse and Thrum. And please stay safe, stay 1.5 metres away, keep washing those hands, and thanks for listening.